again, the best part about the second hour is you get to hear the disclaimer again.
Yeah, and I am not responsible for what I say. I never have been.
I might not ever be responsible for anything again.
Uh-uh. Nope.
You're listening to We the People. We are talking about immigration today, and if you missed the first hour, you can find it at wethepeopleradio.us. So my name is Aaron Ryan, a.k.a. Marge Simpson.
Yeah,
today.
Marge.
Hi, Marge. And I'm Bill Kendiff. And
our Simpson.
Bill will be cast in the role of Homer, yes.
Yeah,
excellent.
I'll be Homer. All right, yeah, and our sponsor this hour is Teen Power. Our local John.
It has nothing
Deere
to do with the Simpsons?
No, no. They haven't really had anything to do with the Simpsons for a long time. Anyway, local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer, parts sales service. Give you a great deal on a tractor right now. They've got great inventory sitting up there ready to go.
And a new sign.
Yeah, they got a brand new sign. Drive up by 5, check out that new sign, day or night. Man, that thing is big. And you can find them at 3119 Twin View Boulevard up there in Shasta Lake City. Or give them a call at 226-9226. Or get them on the web at readingtractors.com. That's Team Power. And there you have it.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
So our guest today, this second hour, is a person in the studio, so we'll all be able to hear each other. And it's kind of bad, though. We won't be able to talk over him and, like, make commentary while he's still talking.
Oh, I'll talk over him. There's no problem there.
Yeah, it's going to make it hard. That's all over now. But our guest is Simon Watson.
A.K.A. Bart Simpson.
That's right. You could be Bart.
Yeah, you could be Bart.
The whole Simpson family.
I've really got to watch that show one day. I just really have never watched it.
You're missing out.
Apparently. Everyone says it's great. It's been on for, what, 74 years or something?
Much longer than I've been alive, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Stop it.
I was born in 96, and it's been around since, I think, the late 80s or early 90s.
Wow.
Yeah, it has. Been around a long time.
We were out of college by then. Mm-hmm. And we're old meets young. So, Simon is actually Australian.
Not a U.S. citizen.
Yes.
And you're
an Australian citizen.
You're here on a visa, right?
That's right. Despite not having much of an accent either.
Yeah.
Well, I know. Well,
yeah,
see, that's the thing.
I'm disappointed in that, by the way.
Yeah.
But I forgive you. tell me what the process is for getting a visa to come over here and work. What'd you have to go through to do that?
Well, I mean, the difficulty depends on the visa, but your typical visa, such as the one I came in on, which is an F1 visa, you use it to study at, say, college or university. The process usually starts online. You'll fill out a bunch of applications, pay a fee or two. It's a while ago, so I can't remember the exact steps.
Yeah.
But, you know, you pay a bunch of fees, you do a lengthy application online, you set up an in-person, face-to-face interview at the nearest U.S. consulate. So for me, that was in Melbourne, Australia. And then you go to the U.S. consulate, you wait in a waiting room for a couple hours, and you get called up to what looks like a bulletproof
how friendly.
Glass window, mm-hmm. And they'll basically interrogate you for a little while. And their sole job, the immigration officer's job, is to you're essentially guilty until proven innocent. So you've got to essentially prove your innocence to them as to why you should.
That you're not nefarious and you're not going
exactly.
to do something bad.
So, for example, one of those things would be, if you enter on a student visa, from the time that you get the visa, you're promising that you'll return home after your studies, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to try to ask you the kind of leading questions that will get you to, admit to that you're going to try to find some way to stay from the get-go. You know, you're going to try to get married, you're going to try to, you have some uncle over there mechanic shop you're going to work at, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So they're going to try to, they're going to test you to see if what you're saying is really true.
And is this in the American embassy?
Embassy.
Okay.
Yeah.
All
so,
right.
The U.S. has an embassy in the capital of basically every country around the world. And then, depending on the country, we'll have numerous what are called consulates in, mm-hmm. in important cities in that country.
Is there like a lot of people lined up to get visas when you go in there, or is it not that crowded? Or
I'm sure it depends on the day. When I went there, the room was full of people. Mm-hmm. Some there probably getting student visas.
Right.
Some there business visas.
Yeah, because when I think of that, I think of our U.S.-Mexican border, and that's just got to be
how long
hell.
Do you have to sit on that wall?
Right.
I mean, it's just got to be a line around the building,
Check your climbing skills.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's right.
So you pass that examination, and do they like just like stamp your passport and give you a visa at that point, or
sort of? So they take your passport from you, and then they send it to their embassy, which is because Canberra is the capital of Australia, so they'll mail your passport to Canberra, and where their U.S. embassy is, and then they will put a wax visa inside one of the empty pages on your passport.
Mm, okay, and how long is that good for?
It depends entirely on the visa. So my one is essentially good forever as long as you're enrolled in a educational institution, so a university or college.
Oh, okay.
Full-time. And the caveat to that is that you are not allowed to work full-time or at all off-campus. You can work on campus part-time.
Oh, so you have to be a full-time student and you cannot work.
Yes. So that's why, yeah, that's a big,
wow.
Big caveat. Yeah.
And then when you're done with your studies... is there like a grace period, or do you just, when you're out of school, you're out of here?
Well, you know, first of all, every time you complete a degree, depending on what kind of degree it was, you can work for a year or two full time in the area of study that you majored in. So
Well, okay.
For me, that's politics. So that's why
right.
I worked for the Assemblyman for a year, you know, salary paid legally, obviously. But if you don't take advantage of that ability to work in your area of study, then you have a 60-day grace period to leave.
So you worked, and did you pay your taxes?
Absolutely, I did.
Okay.
Yep, both while I was working and before I was working. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that's kind of the basics.
What's kind of like start to finish? Like months, a year? I mean, how long from like I have this brainy idea that I think I'm going to go apply for this visa? Where, I mean, I'm sure every country is different, but. But for your process, how long did that whole thing take?
So if you've got to combine the actual time it takes to do that visa process that I just explained, combined with researching, say, a university or college.
I was going to ask you that.
Contacting that university or college, building a relationship with their international student coordinator, filling out their application, getting accepted into their institution.
And does that have to be done before you do the visa? Do you have to show that you're into a school?
From memory, you do, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would say, it realistically, for someone overseas to say, hey, I want to study in the U.S., get my degree in the U.S., you know, it's probably about a year-long process. I'm sure you can rush into it quicker than that, but it's a year-long process, I would say, doing all the research, the applications. And one of the big things that you have to do is you have to show that you're going to be able to financially support yourself. So both the U.S. government wants to see that. And the university wants to see that.
So you have to come here with, like, savings of some kind?
Yeah, generally, if you're not allowed to work while you're in school, you have to come over here with those funds.
Absolutely.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, you've nailed it on the head. So generally, you know, ballpark, I would say they want to see at least twice as much as whatever the tuition is. So let's just say, so my associate's degree cost me $20,000, so they want to see that you have at least $40,000, you know?
Hmm.
Wow.
Interesting.
Wow.
You know, it's kind of funny. This is never the part we don't learn anything about this part.
No.
You know, the people who actually do this correctly. Yeah, you guys are the unsung heroes of this whole process. When we come back, I want you to tell Bill how this all started for you. Because I think that part of the story, I knew you were leaving before I knew you were from Australia. So I kind of came at this all. I'm like, why is he going to Australia? That's he's funny. Really Australian. I'm like, what? What do you mean he's Australian? So I kind of backed into your story a little bit. So we should let people know because it is a good story. And we'd like to keep you. So
I'm humbled.
But we can't. Anyway, we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. And this country, it belongs to folks like me and you. So let the voice of freedom sing out through this land. This is our country. From the East Coast to the West Coast. Everywhere around the world, they come to America. Every time that flag's unfurled, they come to America. Got a dream to take them there. They come to America. Got a dream they come to share. They come.
I guess that's over.
You'll never get strangled. Yeah.
You know, I've always said that these folks that have nothing good to say about our system, about our system of government and our country, need to go somewhere else. I don't care where. You can go to pick a spot.
Any spot.
Take another Western nation someplace that is a democracy. And live there for a while and just see the difference.
Exactly.
Versus what we have here. And it's it'll blow your mind. It'll blow your mind.
So, Simon, when did you decide to come here? And why?
Well, you know, ever since I was a small child, I've had a profound love for this country. And, you know, when you're a small child, you don't really know why.
Do you, like, read about it in school or something?
Not a lot. I mean, we would probably learn a similar amount about the United States as you would learn about the United Kingdom, you know. So a fair bit, because you say, you know,
sure.
Go over topics like World War II or the English language. So obviously it's all tied together, you know. But not a huge amount, other than that, you know, countries like Australia are saturated in American pop culture, mm-hmm. whether it's music, Hollywood, you know, TV, movies, and just pop culture in general. But as far as school goes, it's not, you know, it's...
So they don't really teach, and why would they, the whole American experience, the whole founding fathers, and how it all became free from England? And
no, I mean, so for example, when I was finishing high school, one of the history classes that you had to take was revolutions. So they would cover one of the great revolutions. It would be the American Revolution, the French Revolution,
right.
Russian Revolution. So there's a chance that you might be put in a class, you might select a class that's American Revolution. But that's not everyone. Another person might just learn about the Russian Revolution. So
a lot of people over there don't really know a lot of American history. Why,
no.
I mean, I don't know any Australian history
other than
used to be a penal colony. I think,
right.
That's all I know. So, so how did you learn about...
That's going to hurt you on your visa application there, Bill.
Yeah, I know.
Just want you to know that.
They're going to use this against you.
I'm going to study up. Why do you know so much about prisons? What's the deal there?
Yeah,
where have
what's
you
up
been?
With that?
Yeah, what's a five-year gap in your work history?
Yeah. So what did you... What in your mind was the picture that was so... you know what I mean? What made it look like a good idea?
Attractive, to want to come here.
Well, I mean, I've always had an awareness of America's role on the global stage, and as I got older, I learned more about that. As I got older, I just started to read more books. I remember one of the first books that I ever read properly by myself and actually enjoyed it, and it wasn't torture to read it, was Ronald Reagan's autobiography.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah.
How old are you?
I think I was like 13 or 14. I used to hate reading when I was a kid.
You are an exceptional young man.
So... it really started there. You know, I always knew I had that really interest and love for this country, but it's only when I started really learning more about it, about the history, of course, as you kind of touched on, mm-hmm. and the politics, the political system, how things were and how they got to be as they are today. And then the third part of that would be, you know, America's unique role on the world stage.
And was it always kind of the politics? I mean, was that intriguing even as a kid?
Yes, yeah. I mean, the politics was always intriguing. I would say I started off being more interested in you know, the international side of things. Mm-hmm. But then inevitably everything's connected. So you become interested in one thing, and then before you know it, you're really interested in another thing, you know?
Sure. Were you interested in politics? I don't know a lot about the politics of Australia or how it works exactly, but... Were you a follower of that? I mean, was it the concept of politics in general?
Yeah, I mean, I had a basic understanding. I'd watch the news, read the news, and whatnot, and have a basic understanding of what was going on. But my at least when I was younger, my interest definitely was across the Pacific Ocean.
Interesting.
Interesting. Yeah. What do you?
So did your family think you were crazy?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Had to know.
what do you? What differences do you see? Living here and the culture here versus the culture in Australia, what really stands
actually,
out and makes it a...
Yeah, when you came here, was it like you thought it would be?
So, you know, when I was getting ready to move over here, all my, you know, friends and family would say, you know, it's not going to be how you're expecting it to be. You've been too influenced by what you see on television and what you read. You know, it's not as idealistic as you think it is. And Honestly, it is. It is. It really is. The last
exactly
3 years,
like you thought?
I feel vindicated. Yeah.
And they haven't been here, so you can tell them really whatever you want.
Yeah, exactly. And I've had the very fortunate opportunity to be more immersed in American culture and politics and the fabric of society than probably a lot of people who come here, especially if it's just for a few years. You know, mm-hmm. So I've had a really unique.
Do you feel like you have more freedoms here than you have in Australia?
Without a doubt, and I think you asked.
And how so?
Well, I think first of all, it comes down to the founding of the United States, mm-hmm. Where individual liberty was always a priority, over other things such as, say, personal safety or, a smoothly running, very centralized government or, it's always been a big pillar of American politics from the get-go. And you were asking me a couple minutes ago, what are some major differences, I think you said. And I think it would come down to one word, and that's individualism. America and Australia are both capitalistic countries. They have a lot in common. And they both originate from England, right? So there's a lot in common.
Right.
But I would say the difference between the United States and any other country in the world, or at least the ones that I've been to or know anything about, is the amount of rugged individualism that Americans have. Australia is a fairly free country, If you go there, you're not going to probably notice anything that would really be like, oh, wow, that's repressive. But if you really read between the lines and really gain an understanding, America really is, despite what some people say, the freest country in the world.
Do you have the same freedoms there, like freedom of speech, freedom to assemble? And
in practice, we do, but it's not codified into the Constitution as it is.
Which is a big difference.
It is a big difference,
yeah.
Because you don't have that solid foundation, so they can be withered away more easily than here.
You had also said that the United States was more conservative than a lot of other places. And
yeah.
I remember when you told me that because I thought, all you ever hear now is that, we're just some bastion of liberal insanity.
It's really not true. I mean,
I was like, need the guy from outside looking in, right?
It's really not true. If you go to any country in Western Europe or Australia or New Zealand or most places around the world, you'll see that you got to look at the political center. I would say the political center is much more conservative across the United States than it is in a country like Australia.
Okay, and so since you've been working in California state politics,
well,
do we make an exception for that? Or
well, not really, because look at Northern California. Look how conservative
right.
Northern California is.
True.
And even if
you were in the good part of the state,
exactly.
We should point that out.
Right,
yeah.
Right. But even if you go to really liberal areas, you'll talk to people that you'll think are really far left. But even when you compare them to people overseas, even though that their values are more left wing, they still have at least a trace of, that American spirit in them, and like talk to people in Silicon Valley. Obviously that's, a mm-hmm. more liberal area of the of the country, but it has still that pursuit of, of
the American dream,
capitalism. Yeah. So it's, if it's alive there, then you can bet it's alive everywhere else in the country.
And you don't feel that or see that in Australia?
Oh, you do. I just say it's to a lesser extent.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And then obviously you don't have the Second Amendment rights that you have in Australia. That's totally different.
That's a big one. No Second Amendment. And Australia's had some of the world's most restrictive gun laws since 1996, when there was a very tragic mass shooting in the island of Tasmania.
Is that what set the whole thing off? Confiscation?
I'm not an expert on the history of gun control in Australia, but just broadly speaking, I'd say that there have been several mass casualty incidents throughout probably the 60s, 70s, and 80s. So I'm sure there were restrictions that came into place, and it got tighter and tighter. But without a doubt, 1996 was the turning point for gun control in Australia, because they had a mandatory national buyback program,
right,
where they essentially made it almost impossible to get semi-automatic weapons and pump-action shotguns, and those that had those weapons had to surrender them or face stiff penalties.
Are people mad about that there?
I would say a small minority of people are mad about it.
Really?
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just not a... It's. I mean, Australia was a big hunting culture, but it's never been such a gun culture as it is here, you know, where it's more than just hunting. It's about a natural right. It's about self-defense,
right.
Et cetera, right? It's never... I don't think it's ever really been like that in Australia. So it was easier to make the argument for gun control.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Easier in the larger cities, just like it would be here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
Big urban centers.
Definitely.
And you grew up in Melbourne that has how many people?
I should Google on my phone. I think it's over 4 million, but okay, right.
Okay.
I don't know
well,
off the top of my head.
I mean,
but it's a large city. It's like a flat version of San Francisco, you know.
Okay.
Think of that. I never lived in Melbourne. I always lived, you know, in the countryside, but with a close proximity to Melbourne, so... most recent move was to an hour north of Melbourne, a place called the Maston Ranges. Really picturesque countryside area, but within an hour train ride or car ride to the city. So,
interesting. Well, I want to know what you're going to do when you go back and that sort of thing when we return. We have to take a quick break. Our guest is Simon Watson. He is an Australian student who's been working in American politics, and his visa has expired. And
expiring,
wait for it.
Not expired yet.
terribly sorry. Yes, expiring.
Yeah.
lest we meet the local ICE agent.
I know somebody's knocking on the door out there.
I just heard the doorbell. And he's actually going to go back home, huh? Because his visa's expiring. Wow.
Well,
and we could have to give lessons.
Novel concept.
Yeah, we hope you return though. You're listening to We the People.
People talk bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me.
So you can go back and tell them it was all real.
Exactly, it was all real.
I think that's great. What was the first thing that you remember? Like, you're all. That's exactly what I thought it was going to be like.
Just the friendliness and hospitality of the American people that I've met. You know,
really.
Yeah,
and I think sometimes people feel like we're not doing that so well.
Yeah, people have just been so welcoming and inviting into their homes, and so willing to go out of their way to help me out, you know. So I'll always remember that. And I'm sure that, you know, there are great people in every country around the world and hospital people everywhere, but just that was one of the standouts.
But I mean, we're just noticed. You know, regular schlub Americans who live here, right?
Right.
So it's so interesting to hear, you know, somebody comes from a country that we would consider basically kind of the same, you come here and it's just fun to hear the viewpoint. And you didn't really know anybody when you came here. You knew a couple people or something?
Yeah, exactly. And then from those people, it branched out. So
yeah, because winding up in Redding, far northern
not,
California.
Generally,
like,
you would think you would wind up in San Francisco or
Hawaii.
What year did you come?
2015. Yes.
Okay.
So it's about 3 years to the date
that
I've been here. So I spent the first 2 years getting my associate's degree at Shasta College and, you know, putting my foot in the water, you know, on the political scene around locally and around the state. And
did you like help with campaigns and stuff?
I did, yeah. So, so I actually, you know, I started going to Shasta College, and then, as I said, started testing the waters politically and just seeing what I might want to do and learning about the area, and started interning for Assemblymember Brian Daly, and I interned for him for a year whilst I finished my degree, and then upon completing my degree, I, you know, worked for him as a salary staffer for a year. And here I am today.
Fast forward.
Yeah.
So how did you wind up doing that? How did you even really know you could go be an intern? Because I think there are a lot of people who've lived here a long time and have no clue.
It's funny because it kind of relates to you. I decided to go to, I think it was the the fall organizing the California Republican Convention near San Francisco.
Okay.
And then-candidate Donald Trump was making a stop to give a speech at the convention near San Francisco. And there was mass protest.
I was going to say chaos ensued.
And we essentially got, there was a huge protest. We got basically locked inside the convention hotel that we were at. And it's, I'm looking for something to eat. I leave the convention center and start walking down the street because they've got a pretty wide perimeter around it, so I could actually walk down the street before I met the protesters.
Oh, before you exited the safety zone?
So then, who comes driving by, I think in his BMW, or maybe it was Mercedes? Mark Spanagel.
That's funny.
So he sees me, and obviously he knows, because I've got my convention ID on, my Republican identification.
And did he know who you were?
No, he didn't know what I was. He just saw obviously I wasn't a protester, because I had my CAGOP thing on, right? And I think he rolled down his window and was like, hey, I'm going to go to a Chinese place around the block. You want to come? And I piled in the back of his car with a couple other people. And we went at lunch and told him where I was from. And turned out that, his chief of staff for Congressman Doug LaMalfa, who represents District 1, for U.S. Congressional District. And that's the area that I'm living in, believe it or not. So
you just stepped right in the middle.
I know. That's a coincidence right there. And he started asking me, what I wanted to do. And said, well, I'm trying to get as involved as possible, maybe do an internship or something, and ask him who he would recommend. And I think I can't remember whether or not he recommended, your office, Congressman LaMalfa's office. He may have, but he definitely also did recommend Assembly Member Brian Daly. So that kind of stuck with me, and that's how that ended up happening.
What a crack up.
Yeah.
So you're just walking down the street.
Wow.
Still right place at the right time.
So stuff
right there.
Totally works out for you. This is good. I can't wait to see what the rest of the story looks like. You'll have to
definitely. Yeah, we'll have to Skype in. Huh?
Yeah, I was going to say we want some reports back. So what are you going to do when you go home?
I'm going to try to
What were you doing before? I remember you told me. I think you worked at Starbucks.
I
end up coming here. Right?
I mean, if you're basically as soon as I finished high school, so I worked at Starbucks for 3 years when I was going to school. Saved up some of that money I saved up to come over here, but I'm definitely not trying to go back to the hospitality and retail sector. So,
why not?
Customer service is awesome.
So I'm going to, I'm going to try to continue open chapter two in my career as far as
you're going to try to get involved with Australian politics.
Yes. Yeah. So hopefully, find someone that
could go infect them with American ideas.
That's right. Find someone, similar to Assemblyman Brian Daly, someone who I at least, I want to work for someone over there where I at least agree with 80% of their political
views. I don't know how you could represent a member of any political body and not agree with what they think. I mean, it's not that kind of job.
I mean, that's what was wonderful about working for Assemblymember, Brian Daly, is that I truly believe in the political ideals that he believes in. I think that he's a legislator of integrity and has a great family and the best of all, great staff. So I want to find someone like that again. I don't have to agree with 100% of their ideals, but I want them to.
Yeah, but at least
I want them to have integrity, and I want to believe with the majority of what they're. Just like you would, I mean, you wouldn't want to go work for Senator Dianne Feinstein.
Yeah, you're going to wake up in the morning and then find out they said what?
Oh no,
because that blows back on you hard.
Yeah,
I mean, everybody's integrity is all tied together.
Definitely.
I always think of all those poor slobs who worked for Anthony Weiner. Imagine. That's a bad day in the press right there.
Definitely.
Very interesting, though, that after this much time, because I've had a lot of people have called and said, they're panicked. Simon has to go back. We have to keep Simon. How can we keep Simon?
Unbelievable.
And so, your constituents are calling, how can we keep Simon? I know it's pretty cute.
I love that, and I love them.
They're like, we can't let him go. He's the kind we want to keep. They all say the same thing. The kind, right?
He's the kind we want to keep.
As opposed to the other fish we want to toss back, apparently. But the whole immigration thing, how hard would it be, just in what you've learned, to transition from coming here on a student visa? Let's say you did change your mind after you told the nice immigration man you were totally coming back. If you decided, hey, I'd like to stay here, is that even possible, or do you really have to go back and then do it again?
Probably have to go back and start all over.
Well, I mean, the U.S. has essentially a visa for every letter in the alphabet. So it's a huge system. And I'm not exaggerating there. So Yeah, there are a lot of different visas out there, but they all have different strict criteria, stipulations that have to apply to you. So generally, as far as someone like me goes, the main roadblocks are going to be lack of education and experience, education being the most important thing. So I've got a PhD, and I've got the State Assembly, for example, that somehow wants to sponsor me, and I'm a highly educated, well-accomplished person, then that's going to be a lot easier to find me a work visa that suits me rather than, oh...
So the work visa has to be in the field that you studied, or
no? I mean, there are general work visas, understanding. But you have to tick a bunch of boxes. So they're looking at,
are you unique in your
exactly?
Right. Do we need another worker
exactly,
in this field?
Right. So if you're a nuclear physicist, it's going to be a lot easier than some kid with an associate's degree in political science.
Right.
So and that makes sense, right?
Because, yeah.
Well, yeah, unless you're a liberal Democrat, then they're probably going to want to.
And then we have lots of those.
Yeah.
Interesting. So when you start looking at that, what are your avenues? Like, what are the choices going forward? You've been here once on a visa. Does that help you or hurt you if you wanted to come back again, or is it immaterial?
Well, I mean, it's immaterial for the most part. The good thing is that I 100% abided by all immigration.
Exactly. That weighs very heavily.
Bonus.
So, you actually went back
exactly,
when you were supposed to.
Exactly. And I never, don't even have a speeding ticket to my name. So, when I go back, let's just say I work for a decade or two in Australia and come back as an older man on, say, one of those work visas or maybe on a permanent residency card, then they'll look at my history and they'll see that there was no marks against my name, so
no hanky panky.
No hanky panky. Yeah. That's
well,
great.
So if your visa did expire,
yeah.
Right? Not expiring as it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, so the clock ticks. You've overstayed. Then you what? Hide out? I mean, how do people do
well,
that? They say that there's like millions of them that have expired visas.
Most people don't know this, but the majority, if not the vast majority, and I don't have any statistics, but at least the majority of illegal immigrants in the United
yes.
States. Didn't come across the southern border. They just simply overstayed
their visa. Yeah,
and
exactly.
That's like 60%. I mean, it's a huge
right,
percentage.
Exactly. So, the thing is, America's got, a population of 320 million people, something like that. Got millions of immigrants. It's a huge country with a lot of other, things going on. And it's nearly impossible to keep tabs on
right.
everyone that decides to
and they know
their
that.
Visa. And they
yeah.
know that. It's,
yeah.
Yeah. And someone who has no criminal record but decides to overstay their visa isn't exactly a priority for enforcement, as opposed to someone who's racked up multiple felonies.
But how do they right. get? How would you get a job if you don't have like a social security number, birth certificate, all that kind of stuff? I mean, the whole game changes after
well,
that.
You could forge your identity, so you could just buy a false identity.
You could just stay here and be someone else. Huh?
Right. That's the first thing you can do.
I didn't
do,
think of that.
But that's more difficult than I mean, I have a social security number,
you
and
do?
The reason I have one is because I pay taxes. So I worked on campus when I was doing my degree, because you can legally work part time on campus. So they. It's kind of a catch 22. In order to employ me, they have to issue me a social security number. So even if I overstayed my visa, that social security number is still tied to my identity, and I could still, in theory, use that if I wanted to, and I may or may not get found out for doing so.
But then they could come snap you up.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Or not.
Or not, yeah.
Wow. So overstaying the visa isn't really that simple, exactly.
It's not that simple, and if you're from a third world country that's war torn and has a terrible economic situation, then you have maybe more incentive to overstay your visa because you're returning to a nightmare when you return home. So maybe you say, okay, it's worth the possibility of getting caught. It's worth having to look over my back to stay here, overstay it, because my life here is so much better than back home. But for someone from a country like Australia to do that. I mean,
it's kind of silly.
It's kind of silly because
yeah.
once you overstay your visa, you can never go home to visit family because the way they figure it out, the way they track you is essentially not when so much when you depart the country, but when you arrive the country. They'll see you the last
That's right,
time
I've
you
heard
depart
that.
The country.
Yeah, we only keep track when when people
come back
in.
Yeah, so
right.
if you overstay your visa,
you can never
you can
come
fly
back in.
Home, but
yeah.
then when you
exactly.
pull your passport
yeah.
out to come back, they're
exactly.
going to go,
Yeah, so that's the thing.
Yeah.
And you can never come back, and... So either you can never leave or you can never come back. So that's
right.
And you can never, unless you've found some very unique situation, you can't have a professional job. You can have a job that pays good money, but you can never
back
have
to Starbucks again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But you can never have a job that had a background check on it.
How's that work? Totally ignorant on this subject, but if I wanted to say I lived in Australia and I wanted to come over here and vacation, how long can I stay?
I believe you can stay up to 90 days. Although, don't quote me on it because I'm not an expert. But I think
there's no
it's
visa.
About
they don't issue a visa or anything when you come
just
over.
Just travel.
So there are certain countries which are a part of the United States visa waiver program, and Australia is one of them. Most of the countries in Europe are also part of it. So you do not need a visa. You do not need a tourist visa. You just need to fill out an instant application online, print it out, and give it to the immigration officers when you're entering the port of entry, like
right.
LAX, and then you're in because you're in that. You're in that group of countries that I guess.
So I'm sure there's something in that verbiage that says you can stay for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, I imagine it's like 90 days or something
right.
like that, and you can't obviously work
right.
or anything.
And
like
then
that.
Again, if you overstay that
yeah,
and try to come back, you're SOL.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a tricky place. One of the people that wanted the congressman to make a call for you, he said, "Can't he just call somebody?" Like, this isn't like the Wizard of Oz with the guy with the fuzzy mittens at the door.
I mean, well, that's exactly right. I mean, America,
there's like no guy to call.
The United States is a country of laws, and it is not a corrupt country like, say, Russia, where
someone to call.
Yeah, in Russia, I'm sure if you know the right person that has the right Kremlin connection, then
you just got
under the sun, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. But America is not like that. It's a system of laws, and it does not have that kind of corruption where you just know the right person and you got the insider hookup.
Bring on the oligarchs.
And a lot of people would debate that, but that's the truth.
Yeah, when you try to work things like immigration, then you find out,
or many other things.
Yeah, it's not as easy to call the guy.
Tom Basengo doesn't mean you're just going to get let out of jail, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. Just call the sheriff. He'll just let you out.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, I know him.
He disowned you, though.
Well, it's his loss.
You got nothing for that? All right, we'll be right back with our guest, Simon Watson. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. There you go.
Sing it, Ray.
Figured that would be a good send-off song.
Your music selection's on point.
That would give you something to take home. all the versions. What's the national song in Australia?
It's the Australian national anthem. You just have to look it up. I'm not sure. It's not called...
You're not going to sing it for
I'm not going to sing it for you, no.
Oh, I forgot to tell you about that.
You'll have to look it up on YouTube there.
But, I mean, is it like our national anthem?
Sure, yeah. It has similarities.
But, I mean, is it customary to stand up? I mean,
it's customary to stand up, but it's not customary to put your hand on your heart.
Do you guys have, like, a Pledge of Allegiance?
No.
Thing?
No, there's no Pledge of Allegiance that I'm aware of. There may be one, but nothing in common use.
Oh, so you can have all of our football players then.
Right.
You just send them over there.
Yeah, just send them over there for a season, yeah. So no Pledge of Allegiance that's commonly used, and there's no etiquette. Like the etiquette's probably taken less seriously than it is here.
Really?
Which I think's a shame, you know.
Yeah, people are pretty hardcore about it here.
Yeah. For good reason. For
right,
good reason.
Right. I mean, the flag is always to the flag's right.
Absolutely, yeah.
Although you don't have those kind of rules, really.
Definitely not as hardcore in Australia, but I think it's like that in the United States for good reason, because this is a great country, and the flag, for one, deserves to be respected.
Yeah. It's just funny. You think it happened. I mean, I don't know. In the back of my mind, I guess I forget that everywhere doesn't do that.
Right.
You know, that,
so, yeah, I mean, if you're...
I assume we're all doing the same thing.
If you're attending a cricket game in Australia, then you would stand out if you were to do something like put your hand on your heart. It must be an American tourist watching a game of cricket.
Oh, you know? No kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
How big an influence does Britain have with Australia?
has vast influence. I mean, Australia only federated from the United Kingdom in 1901. So, and I think, and again, don't quote me on it because I'm not a historian, but I think that Australians may have been using British passports until maybe the 1960s. It's, you know, as the United States, you know, the United States obviously has a lot of ties to the United Kingdom historically, and so does Australia. But with Australia, one, it's more recent, and two, there was no War of Independence.
Right.
So, there's definitely a more immediate tie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that whole, yeah, when you have to fight him to get rid of him, that kind of entrenches everyone a little bit more.
That's right. That's right.
A whole different attitude about the whole thing.
Yeah. And also time. And I would say, if you look at it today in 2018, I'd say America and the United Kingdom probably have roughly equal influence on Australia. Because, you know, culturally, politically, economically, you know, both countries have probably about an equal influence, and I think America gained influence really following World War II, or during World War II, because of assisting Australia with the Japanese threat, and then the economic trade between the two countries.
Sure.
Following that.
What do you, since you've been here for this, several-year period, when you look around, what are... Like, things have really polarized. When you first got here,
Right in the heat of the
politics
Trump
were kind of one way, and then all of a sudden, you know, the beginning of 2017, it was like, we were off to the races in sort of a strange way. What do you think the biggest misconception people, Americans, have about their own country? Just from looking in from the...
In a nutshell, I think especially a lot of older Americans that have more experience and have seen things, you know, how they were in the past more. Uh-huh. A lot of Americans seem to have this notion that, oh, America's going to hell in a handbasket, we're doomed, you know, the naysayers. And I think that is the most patently false thing someone could possibly say. You know, this country's got its challenges right now that America's facing politically and internally and externally challenges, right? But it's nothing insurmountable. It's nothing bigger than what America's faced in the past, both internally and externally.
So it isn't like, ooh, good thing I got there when I did, because it'll be gone.
Oh, no. I mean, like, say externally, United States faced Nazi Germany and Soviet Union all in one century. Internally, you had the, you know, women's rights movement, you had the civil rights movement, all of that. You had, you know, the 60s, you had Vietnam, you had, you know, so America's been through a lot, and it's a hard country. And
We're still here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, is Americans, with all their differences, and especially now, as polarized as we are right now, it doesn't take very much for everybody to just flip the switch and come back together again. Mm. I mean, you look at what
9/11
happened.
9/11 was a great example of that.
Great example.
Absolutely.
It doesn't ever take a whole lot. Well, maybe it does take a whole lot, but it's still there. There's still that American spirit that can be awakened at any moment with any great event. Mm. I think people would come together on a lot of fronts.
And I think for every one thing that you can point out to me that's going wrong in American culture and American politics right now, I can tell you 10 things that are going right, you know, that maybe weren't going right in the past. So there's a lot to be hopeful for, and I'm very optimistic for the future of this country.
Oh, I am too. I think there's a lot of things on the horizon that maybe weren't there, just not.
And I just keep hearing
too far off.
You know, when you told me, oh, people are much more conservative here than they are in other places, and it that's just so funny because we really do. Mm. I mean,
it's just those
of us that are here all the time. Mm, you know, we look at it and it's like, oh, for God's sake! Right. I mean, what are we doing?
At the end of the day, you know, America is based on individual liberty, capitalism, free enterprise, and that's always going to be, I think, at the root of American politics. So that's why I think even, you know, someone who might consider themselves center-left over here, whether they're going to admit it or not, they probably have more conservative beliefs than someone who would consider themselves center-left in a Western European country.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. So. Yeah. And tell me this, do people get involved, like... If you go back home and you want to be involved in politics, is it I mean, to say, is it like here? That's kind of weird. But, I mean, is it like here where really very few people are involved in politics?
I mean, politicians are hated around the world for good reason, right? So
you do have some similarities.
Exactly. And I think that's probably the same everywhere for the most part.
So you have 95% of the people popping off on various topics, but just a handful that work.
Of course. And that's like that at every level. And that's the same overseas. Yeah. The actual active part of society is much smaller than
kind of the
society
same deal.
At large. Yeah.
Interesting. And do you have a political? Will you go back to school over there? Like, will you do political
science
there?
I would like to go get, say, my bachelor's degree as a minimum. But right now, I'm career orientated, so I'm going to let that take a back seat and figure out what the next chapter of my career is. And then once I've got that, locked down, then I'll consider going back to school, maybe online, so I can work and do say.
Well, that makes
my
sense.
Bachelor's degree online.
Well, working in American politics. For the time you spent over here, will that help you over there? Will that influence?
I'm confident it will.
Yeah.
I worked in state politics in California. It's the fifth largest economy in the world. It's a huge state, and therefore state government, it's a big deal. And I think I'm 100% convinced that it will definitely empower me with experience.
Sure.
Whether or not people will want that or not is another question, but I'm confident.
Yeah, whether it's marketable or not.
Yeah, whether or not it's marketable, that's a different question. But will it actually give me the tools and the experience needed over there? Absolutely.
Right.
How I market that's I'll have to figure that out.
So did when you were in high school, working at Starbucks, thinking I'm gonna save my money, I'm gonna go to America, work in politics, and people were like, sure you are.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So when you left, were they like, yeah, good luck with that?
Yeah, exactly.
And then you heard he's what?
So you get to go back with a whole backpack full of I told you so. Huh?
Exactly, and great relationships that I've been able to build over here with. People like you,
and
folks.
You've done great work here. I mean, I, as far as we knew, you were a great American citizen. So good on you for your keen disguise.
Thank you.
And it was a complete.
It's really been an honor and a pleasure to be in Northern California, to be in the U.S. And
well, another good thing too is when you go home now, you'll at least have an archive of your experience on one of the top radio shows.
Exactly,
one of the top radio shows in the North State. Yeah,
I'll put on my resume extensive experience in talkback radio.
There you go,
broadcasting.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh,
well, thanks
gosh.
For being with us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me on.
It's a lot. I didn't want you to escape the country without without coming in. I just thought your message is something that people should hear.
Yeah, absolutely.
About Mexico all the time. That's the only immigration we ever discuss, and all the people breaking the rules. So thanks for coming here and not breaking the rules, and
thank you for having me.
Being a great job, doing a great job. Our guest has been Simon Watson this hour. You can find out about him, and I think we're going to list some contact info for him. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.